The following previews are of graphic audio productions rated for mature audiences due to scenes of intense violence and sexual situations.
From the creators that brought you the critically acclaimed Eagles series comes a whole new kind of Western. Far from the civilized lands of the East lies a harsh and brutal territory, surrounded by towering mountains and battered by howling winds. There is no law. There are no rules. The land is governed by the way of the gun. Blood is the only currency, and all debts are paid in full. In this land, there is a legend.
Some people say he's always been here. They say he's as old as the mountains. They say he's a ghost.
Running from a past he can't escape, killing in order to live, his legend grows. No one knows his face, but they all know his name. The High Lonesome is his land. He rides alone, fighting for the innocent. The wicked be damned. He is the ghost of the wilds. He is the first mountain man. He is Preacher.
What are you gonna do now?
I'm gonna find him. And I'm gonna kill every damn one of them.
Interrupt your regularly scheduled programming to bring you the President of the United States of America.
Good evening, my fellow Americans. If you are now hearing this message, it is because something of vital concern to the American people has just taken place. It would appear now that the possibility exists of Soviet military action to some degree or another against the United States. If you are now hearing this message, it simply means...
Hello?
Sarah, it's me.
Oh, God, Tom. I'm so scared. Where are you? Are you watching the TV?
I know, Sarah. It's okay.
John, what's going to happen? What should I do?
Sarah, hold on. I'll be home soon.
Promise me, John. Promise me you'll make it home.
Nothing on earth can stop me. I love you, Sarah. I'll be home soon. I promise you.
The promise was made.
Ladies and gentlemen, approximately 15 minutes ago, satellites indicated a massive Soviet intercontinental ballistic missile launch against the U.S. mainland.
The end game was played.
Oh, God. It's gone. It's all gone.
Now, the promise must be kept. Hell has swept across America. Anarchy and chaos reign. But somewhere in the blackness of this labyrinthian abyss, his family waits for him.
John! John! Where the hell are you going?
My family needs me.
I'm gonna find him. The Reds have death squads everywhere. And even if you manage to escape them, you can't survive the desert. It's too big, man. You have to accept that your family... Well, there's no way they could have survived.
My family is alive. They need me. And I will find them.
Alone, John Thomas Worth will set out across the endless wasteland. All his CIA covert operative training will be put to the test. Driven by love and fueled by hate, he will fight. He will kill. He will survive. The Survivalist, coming soon to Graphic Audio.
And now, for our feature presentation.
Graphic Audio. A movie in your mind.
Graphic Audio presents William W. Johnstone's Blood Bond. Narrated by Thomas Penny. With performances by Dylan Lynch, James Lewis, Michael Glenn, David Coyne, James Konacek, Jeff Baker, Terrence Aselford, Richard Rowan, Michael Raplogel, Ken Jackson, Christopher Graybill, Elliot Dash, Sonny Lasky, Ariane Parker, Tim Carlin, Colleen Delaney, Nanette Savard, Nathaniel Perry, Johan Detweiler, and Mort Shelby. Blood Bonds Number 3, Gunsight Crossing.
Do you have any idea at all where we might be?
Of course I do. We're in New Mexico territory.
You said that last week.
It's a big territory.
And it was hot. The hard-packed and rutted road upon which they traveled eastward flung the heat back at them. They had seen jackrabbits, a few eagles soaring high in the brilliant blue of the sky, and nothing else for 2 days.
But I think it's time to cut south.
I think it's time to do something. We're running out of food. And if we don't find water soon, we're going to die out here in this godforsaken place.
Matt Bodine and Sam August Webster Two Wolves were blood brothers, bonded by the Cheyenne ritual that made them as one. They were also Onihamahan, friends of the wolf. The two men could and often did pass as having the same mother and father, which they did not. They were the same height and very nearly the same weight. Both wore the same type of 3-stone necklace around their necks, the stones pierced by rawhide. Both had gone through the Cheyenne coming of manhood. They had the scars on their chests to prove it.
You really think God has forsaken this country?
No, of course not. But I think that perhaps he ignores it more than other sections.
The brothers cut south. The horses suddenly pricked their ears and became restless.
Indians?
I hope not. This is Comanche and Apache country, I think.
Sam stood up in the stirrups and sniffed the air. It was moist.
Water.
What do you mean, I think? You don't know what tribes are around here?
I am Northern Cheyenne, idiot. From 1,000 miles north of this desolation. Am I supposed to know everything about every tribe in North America?
A stranger would think the two disliked each other. They loved each other as brothers. The constant poking and ribbing was their way of showing the affection both felt for the other. As many trouble hunters had learned painfully, quickly, and sometimes fatally, mess with one, and you had to deal with the other. Both men were excellent trackers and woodsmen, and both had the reputation of gunfighters, although neither had ever sought nor wanted that title.
You're half Cheyenne, and I don't expect you to know anything. Without me, you'd have been lost 2 weeks ago.
You couldn't find your way to an outhouse if you had the squirts.
The next day, the young men crossed a road that headed south by southwest. It looked well-traveled, but neither Matt nor Sam were looking for company, so they elected to go on for another day. They topped a ridge and saw another road, this one running north and south, and just beyond that, a river.
What river is that?
I have no inkling whatsoever. Texas was your idea, not mine.
Matt stood guard while his blood brother took a bath, soaping himself generously and diving under the waters several times to rinse off. He climbed out, dried and dressed, and Matt took his turn. They both needed it. It had been about 10 days since they'd bathed and shaved, but a shave was going to have to wait. It was growing late in the afternoon, and both men were weary from the long, hot, almost waterless miles and days behind them. Sam made camp while Matt rode out to shoot some rabbits for their supper. Their supplies were growing dangerously low. Matt killed 2 jackrabbits, and Sam had the last of their potatoes and onions ready for stewing when his brother returned. While the stew was bubbling and thickening, the young men drank coffee and relaxed.
You know, I hate to say it, but this river may be the Pecos.
Pecos? If that's the case, we're almost out of New Mexico.
Yeah. Want to cut south and follow the river come first, lad?
Why not?
The two young men were wandering, entirely aimlessly, trying to get their minds settled before returning to their home range in Wyoming. They had witnessed the awful carnage at Little Bighorn the past year, the battle in which Sam's father, Medicine Horse, had charged Custer with a deliberately empty rifle and counted coup on the general, striking him with his coup stick before dying. Matt and Sam had laid on a ridge and watched through the swirling dust as the troopers of the 7th fell. Even though both young men were moderately wealthy in their own right, they both owned ranches and Sam's mother had left him quite an estate for the time, Matt and Sam knew they had to drift for a time. After seeing the slaughter at Little Bighorn, neither man felt at peace with himself. Sam laid his palm to the ground.
Riders coming. Several of them.
I heard them before you did.
Ha! You couldn't hear a bumblebee before it stung you on the rear.
Matt and Sam got to their boots. Both men wore 2 guns. Matt carried both of his in leather, tied down, while Sam carried 1 in leather on his right side and another butt forward on his left side, tucked in a sash he wore around his waist.
Don't look friendly.
Think of a trouble, I'd say.
Bodine moved away from Sam to lessen the odds of both of them being taken out at once, should shooting start.
Slow down! We don't need all that damn dust in our stew!
Instead of easing up, the 4 riders kicked their horses into a gallop and came charging into the camp, knocking over the stew and scattering the blankets. They made their mistake when they slowed, turned around, and came back for another go at the camp. Bodine reached up and jerked 1 out of his saddle, while Sam was doing the same thing to another. The men hit the ground hard, landing on their backs. 1 mounted cowboy made the mistake of grabbing iron. Bodine put a .44 slug in his shoulder. The last rider sat his saddle, wanting to get into action, but not in a terrible hurry to get shot. The shoulder-shot cowboy passed out, falling from his saddle. A big, black-haired fellow got to his boots.
You cocksucking son of a...
Bodine hit the big fellow twice in the belly and then came up with an uppercut that stretched him on the ground. While Sam kept a .44 on the last cowboy in his saddle, Bodine turned toward the other cowpoke, who was getting up.
You want a piece of it?
I reckon not. John Lee ain't gonna like this at all.
I don't give a damn what John Lee likes or dislikes, but I tell you what you're gonna do.
Oh, yeah?
Bodine stepped forward and knocked the man on his rear, bloodying his mouth and momentarily crossing his eyes.
Yeah. You ready to listen?
I reckon so. Beats getting my lights punched out.
Coffee pot smashed and the cook pot fell into the coals. Heat cracked it.
Bodine reached down and removed the man's guns from leather.
Now listen carefully. You ride, I don't care where, and you get back here with a new coffee pot, a new cook pot, and some meat and vegetables to go in it.
Matt pointed to the shoulder shot puncher.
And take that punk with you. The others will stay here for insurance.
Are you crazy, man? Do you know who you're fooling with?
Matt jerked iron and jacked the hammer back, placing the muzzle of the .44 on the man's forehead. The sharp odor of urine filled the late afternoon air as Bloody Mouth peed in his long handles.
If I have to tell you again, I'm gonna be talking to a corpse. Now ride, asshole!
Bloody Mouth got gone. Matt boosted the shoulder shot puncher into his saddle and slapped the horse on the rump. Matt turned toward the kid in the saddle as the black-headed man started to rise. He looked down the muzzle of the .44 in Sam's hand and changed his mind.
You guys are crazy. Where's Val?
He went to get us some food. After a brief altercation with my brother, he quickly realized the boorishness of your actions and felt very apologetic about it.
What the hell did you say?
Shut up.
I understood that.
Fine. Hey, you! Get off your horse. Now use your thumb and forefinger only and toss your guns over to me. What's your name?
Childress.
What the hell was the point of coming in here and hoorahing us?
Just funnin', that's all.
You call destroying someone's camp fun?
You shouldn't have told us to slow up. You don't tell broken lance riders to do nothing. And you're gonna find that out the hard way damn quick.
I doubt it. Now get that coffee pot you tied behind your saddle and make us some coffee.
I'll be damned if and I will.
Bodine moved toward him.
Do it! We ain't got a whole lot of choice in the matter. Be sure to get that coffee sack out of your saddlebags.
Both Sam and Bodine smiled. Childress probably had a spare six-shooter in there, and Blackhead was telling him to use it. Sam put the muzzle of his .44 against the black-haired man's ear.
If he comes out of there with iron in his hand instead of coffee, you're dead.
Forget it, Childress! Just make the damn coffee!
Do you have a name?
Blackie.
Childress slowly made coffee, using water from his canteen. The aroma of the spilled stew wafted deliciously around the camp.
I was looking forward to that stew.
Bodine sat on a weathered log that had drifted down the river from God only knew where and how long ago.
You ain't gonna look forward to John's visit, cause shortly after he gets here, you both gonna be dead men rotting on the ground.
You'll be right there with us.
Matt cut his gaze to Childress.
And so will you.
There was something in Bodine's manner that led both of the punchers to believe he meant exactly what he said. And Sam Two Wolves had the same demeanor.
Are you two related?
Brothers.
Don't see too many men wearing necklaces.
They show us to be members of the Cheyenne tribe. We both endured the coming of manhood.
That's supposed to mean something?
It means something. Now shut your mouth, Childress. We're in a lot more trouble here than you might think.
Wise man. You want some coffee?
I'd appreciate a cup.
The men drank coffee and lounged for nearly an hour. They all heard the thunder of many hooves long before the riders topped the crest of the hill and stopped, looking down at the small camp. Sam and Bodine stood up and picked up Henry rifles, chambering rounds and keeping the hammers back.
Don't do nothing stupid. If John was coming in hostile, he'd done been shooting. Just relax.
I'm very relaxed. Are you relaxed, brother?
I am so relaxed I might fall asleep any moment.
You guys are crazy. John Lee is one of the fastest guns ever. And that's Rawhide O'Neill next to him. And down at the end there, that's Pin Master.
Shut up, Childress. Just shut your damn mouth.
You know something I don't?
Yeah, I sure do. Just be quiet.
The cowhand Matt had sent for the pots, pans, and food rode beside John Lee as the men left the column and headed down the slope. Four riders fell in behind them.
I sent you for pots and pans and food, and you bring back an army. Tell me, you know the difference between a cow's tail and a pump handle?
Huh?
You don't?
I don't understand the question.
I'd hate to send you out for water, then.
You boys need to be taught a lesson, I'm thinking.
You're wearing a gun. Why don't you get your butt and your mouth out of that saddle, and let's see what you can do besides flap your gums.
Why, you...
John looked like he was about to have a stroke. Nobody talked to him like that. He'd show the young pup a thing or two.
That's Matt Bodine, boss.
John Lee slumped a little in his saddle at the words, and the riders behind him stopped smiling. All of them kept their hands in sight.
So it figures that's got to be Sam Two Wolves with him.
Everyone in the West had heard of Matt Bodine. Killed his first man at age 14. When he was 16, rustlers hit the ranch. Matt killed two more and wounded two others. He'd lived with the Cheyenne for more than a year. Then he was a guard, riding shotgun for gold shipments. Four more men went to rest in lonely graves. He scouted for the army and put more so-called bad men in the ground. Sam Two Wolves was just as fast as Matt Bodine and just as quick on the temper as he was on the trigger. John had heard the stories about Sam's high education at an Eastern university and about his white mother's wealth. John quickly surmised he was in the middle of a very volatile situation there. John Lee was a man used to getting his own way, but John Lee was not an ignorant man. He knew that if anyone started shooting, he'd be the first one Bodine would blow out of the saddle.
We didn't bring any cooking utensils.
That's too bad, because we're getting hungry.
And when we get hungry, our tempers get short.
Why didn't you bring what I asked for?
John wanted to tell him to go right straight to hell, but he wisely kept his mouth shut.
I'll tell you why. Because you allow your men to ride roughshod over anything and anybody and think it's funny when other people's possessions are destroyed. You thought you were going to come out here with your pack of hyenas and leave our bodies for the buzzards and the coyotes. You think you're almighty God. Untouchable. I don't like people like you. At all.
Penn Masters rode down the slope.
Come on, Matt. You and me knew each other from our days back on the Tongue. I don't want this to turn into a shooting. Not over some damn pots and pans.
It isn't about pots and pans, Penn. You know that.
Matt, you're the fastest man with a gun I've ever seen. But you'll be shot to ribbons if you start anything here.
And you'll all be dead. And Lord of the Manor there will be the first to go.
Copper, go on back to the ranch and fetch a goddamn coffee pot and other crap. Bring some food. We'll wait here for you.
The puncher left at a gallop. John's eyes were hard and mean as he looked at Bodine.
I don't take no water from no man. Maybe my boys were wrong in what they done. So I'll replace your gear and provisions. Then you best ride on out of this area. No man wants to die before his time, Bodine. But if you ever brace me again and talk to me like you just done, as God is my witness, one of us will die. Come on, boys. Copper don't need no nursemaid to find his way back.
He wheeled his horse and rode away. Penn stayed for a moment, looking at Bodine while Blackie and Childress mounted up and rode off.
Back off on this one, Bodine. John Lee runs this part of the country. He owns everything and everybody. John Lee says frog, people jump.
And maybe he needs somebody to muddy up his pond.
Sam grinned. He had a hunch that he and Matt were going to stick around for a time.
So, what's the plan?
What plan? I just took a dislike for the man, that's all.
He's easy to dislike. Be interesting to see if our gear is replaced.
Oh, I think it will be. I'm sure he considers himself to be a very honorable man, and he might be, in a very peculiar and self-serving fashion. I think as soon as our gear is replaced, we'd best pull out. That fellow back on the trail told us there was a little two-bit town about 10 miles south of the New Mexico line. Half a dozen stores and a flea-bag hotel. What do you think?
I'm game.
Within the hour, the puncher called Copper rode back in and dropped a sack on the ground.
I ain't got a thing in the world again, you fellers, so I'm gonna give you some friendly advice. Get gone. John Lee is all of a sudden hiring hard cases and paying fighting wages. And it ain't cause of the Comanches, neither. Juana Parker and his bunch shot their wad a couple of years back. I don't know what's going on, but was I you boys, I wouldn't stick around and get caught up in the middle of it.
Copper turned his horse and rode off.
The Southern Cheyenne rode with Quanah and his bunch for a time, but not many of them. Most of the others were Kiowa, Guahati, or Arapaho.
What do you think about Copper's claim to know nothing about what John Lee is up to?
Bullshit.
John Lee had returned more than had been destroyed. There was a side of bacon, some flour and beans, potatoes and onions, and a skillet, cook pot, and coffee pot. Matt and Sam quickly packed up and headed south. It was well after dark when they rode slowly into the town. A sign had proclaimed the town's name as Crossing.
Crossing what?
First town after crossing the territory line, I reckon.
That is as good a reply as any.
Crossing had a big general store, a bigger saloon, a blacksmith shop livery stable, a combination saddle and gun shop, a barber shop, a cafe, a marshal's office, and a hotel that was over the saloon.
Bustling little place, isn't it?
They had seen no signs of life. The only building lit up was the saloon.
Let's see to our horses.
They swung into the livery stable and dismounted. A middle-aged man who smelled like he slept inside a barrel of whiskey walked out.
Treat them right. All the corn they want.
You got any money?
They paid him in advance.
You boys ain't got no sense. John Lee told you to get. You ought to get.
News travels fast.
John Lee don't just own the biggest spread in the county. He owns the county. You're not welcome here, boys.
They found that out when they tried to register at the hotel.
Full up.
The saloon was on the other side of a partition. No sounds came from the saloon area. Matt spun the registry book, glanced at it, then lifted his eyes to meet the nervous eyes of the desk clerk.
I got orders, boys.
Matt took the pen, dabbed it in the ink bottle, and started to register.
I wouldn't do that, Bodine.
Matt turned, surprised to see the man alone. The surprise must have been quite obvious, for John Lee smiled.
Did you think I have to have bodyguards around me at all times?
The only thing I know about you is that I don't like you.
You don't even know me, Bodine.
Matt studied the man. A big man, wide of shoulder, with hard-packed muscle and lean of hip. Big hands, thick wrists, heavily muscled arms. Matt guessed him to be in his early 40s.
I know the type.
Sam had given the outside a careful once-over.
He's not alone.
I didn't expect him to be.
John's smile vanished.
The hotel is closed to you boys, but without malice. I have guests coming in. That's all there is to it.
All right. We understand that. You object to us sleeping in the stable?
No. Just be gone by morning.
Riders pulled up in the front of the hotel. Their horses moved like they were weary. John Lee's back was to Sam, and he didn't see the hand signal Sam gave Matt. Trouble.
Mind if we have a drink in your saloon?
I deny no man a drink to cut the dust of the trail. As a matter of fact, I'll buy the first one.
Kind of you.
Tell the barkeep.
He seemed anxious for them to leave the small lobby of the hotel, so they accommodated his silent wishes.
Thank you.
Saddlebags and rifles in hand, the men walked into the bar. It was empty except for the barkeep.
Evening, gents. What'll it be?
I'll have a beer.
One for me, too.
Got some eggs and bread and cheese left from lunch. It'll have to do for supper, seeing as how the cafe is closed.
That'll be fine.
They sat down at a table next to a rear wall. The table was farthest away from the lanterns and in the shadows. The barkeep brought their beer and food.
I heard the exchange in the lobby. All hell's fixing to bust loose around this part of the state. Ride south in the morning until you come to the Circle S spread. 10 miles south of town. They said a good breakfast and will turn no man away from a meal. Talk to Jeff Sparks.
The barkeep had returned to his position behind the long bar.
Now what was that all about?
I don't know. Some damn weird things going on around this place. Makes me curious.
Me too. And I do admire a hearty breakfast.
The Blood Brothers grinned at each other and fell to eating. The men from the lobby began drifting into the bar in pairs. They were uncurried and uncouth, most of them packing 2 guns in leather and another 6-shooter tucked behind the gun belt.
Well now, would you just look at that?
I see it. I know a couple of them. You?
Yeah. Harry Street's the biggest one. Dean Waters is the one with the scar on his face. The 2 standing near the bat wings are Carl Jurgens and Dexter Campbell. That's as worthless a quartet as ever wore boots.
That's Jack Morgan and Jim Johnson sitting at the far table. Arizona gunfighters. Pukey Stagg is the little one off by himself. He's vicious and snake quick. I don't know the other one.
His name is Mac. If he has a last name, I never heard it. He's out of Utah. Gunfighter.
Any of them know you?
Several of them. And I'm not on their list of best-liked people.
I can certainly understand that. You have such an abrasive personality.
Look who's talking. Everywhere you go, you start trouble.
What are you two whispering about over yonder?
None of your damn business.
See what I mean?
The no-counts all looked at the 2 men sitting in the shadows. Big Harry turned slowly from the bar, looking hard at Matt and Sam. He was a huge man, about 6 inches over 6 feet, and weighing a good 250 pounds. And he was as worthless a human being as they came. A killer for hire who would kill a baby as quick as he would an adult. He enjoyed killing children's pets,
just to see the child cry. Matt took the handles of the beer mugs in his left hand, got up, and walked slowly to the bar. The crowd of crud fell back as they recognized him.
Relax, people. We ain't here to start no trouble with Bodine or his half-breed brother. Nothing meant by that, Two Wolves. I just called you what you is.
If I called you what you are, I would probably be put in jail.
Fill him up, barkeep.
You a long way from Wyoming, Bodine.
Quite a ways, Harry.
You still rescuing kids and dogs and cats and little old ladies, Bodine?
You still hiring your gun out to shoot people in the back, Harry?
Dean stepped between the two men before Harry could think of a comeback. He needn't have hurried, for thinking was not one of Harry's strong suits.
Stand easy, Harry. What the hell are you on the prod about, Bodine?
I'm not on the prod about anything. I'm just passing through, Waters. Having a couple of beers before turning in. But I'm not going to take a lot of mouth from this buffalo here.
Who you calling a buffalo, Bodine?
You. I don't see anybody else around that looks and smells like one.
The barkeep laid a sawed-off shotgun on the bar.
No trouble in here, boys, and I mean it. I just had this floor mopped, and blood is hard to get up.
Dean jerked his head at a couple of gun slicks, and they led Harry off to a table. He turned to Bodine.
I hope you're not buying into this, Bodine. This is none of your damn affair.
I don't even know what you're talking about, Waters. But don't crowd me. Just leave me alone and everything will be jam up and jelly.
Matt took his refilled mugs and walked back to the table.
Whatever is going on, it's big. Do we want to stay in the middle of it?
No. Tomorrow we'll ride out to the Circle S and look it over. At first guess, I'd say that John Lee is land hungry and wants to swallow up the Circle S, but he just might be finding it tough chewing.
And you intend to put a couple of more rocks in the stew?
Yeah, like you and me.
And you call me a troublemaker.
The Blood Brothers rode out of town before dawn. The lamps were lit at the cafe, but while both men longed for a cup of coffee, neither man wanted to push their luck. A dozen more men, hard cases all, had ridden in during the night and put up their horses, obviously thinking the stable was deserted. They had talked and confirmed what Matt and Sam had already guessed. John Lee wanted the Circle S spread and was hiring gunslicks to help him get it.
The scum are gathering.
Yes, and it's costing John Lee a good deal of money for those men. They're all top guns.
Yeah, and I'll bet there are more coming in.
If so, then he's building an army. But why all this to take over a ranch? According to the talk, Jeff Sparks barely has enough hands to run his ranch, much less fight.
And maybe we can find that out over breakfast.
I hope they make good coffee.
I hope they don't shoot us before we can find out.
They left the road at a battered, hand-painted sign that was just legible. Circle S, 3 miles. An arrow pointed the way. About an eighth of a mile from the ranch house, a closed gate blocked the way.
Now what?
We wait.
It wasn't a long wait. Less than 5 minutes had passed before a tall old man with a handlebar mustache that was wider than his face rode out. He did not immediately open the gate. He sat his horse and stared at the Blood Brothers. He gave them the once-over very slowly and very carefully, his sharp eyes not missing a thing. And Matt knew he had pegged them as gunfighters right off the bat.
We got the reputation of gunslingers, mister. But it isn't something we wanted or work at. The barkeep at the saloon and crossing told us the Circle S set a fine breakfast.
Did he now?
Yes, sir.
The old man picked up on the sir and smiled.
Them Cheyenne necklaces.
Yes, they are. We're Blood Brothers.
You got names?
I'm Matt and he's Sam.
How come you didn't grub in town? You broke?
We still have some coins to rub together. We had a run-in with a big mouth named John Lee yesterday. After his hands trashed our camp, we shot one and unhorsed the others.
Rather rudely.
Sent one of them back to see his boss with orders to replace our busted gear. Mr. John Lee himself came back with a whole bunch of hands. Had a gunfighter I knew years back with him. Name of Penn Masters. John Lee talked and we listened, then we talked and he listened. He replaced our gear.
Do tell. Come on up to the house. I can't wait to hear the rest of this tale. Name's Dodge. I'm the foreman.
He pointed to a battered basin and a pump by what looked like the bunkhouse.
Wash there. I'll tell the boss we got two more for breakfast. You ain't got no engine in you, and your brother ain't got that much either.
My mother was white. Their marriage was done legally and with prayers from the white man's god and from my father's gods. I was educated at a university back east.
Uh-huh. Wash up and come to grub. And watch your language. The boss's wife and daughters will be at the table. The hands is already et and gone.
A man met them on the front porch of the large, roomy, and airy home. It was a long, low home built in the Spanish hacienda style.
Jeff Sparks, boys. Which one's Matt and which one's Sam?
Jeff was in his late 40s or early 50s. His red hair was just graying a mite. He led them into the house, and the men could see this was a home that was lived in. It had many nice furnishings for the frontier, but the chairs and couches were to sit on, not for show.
Girls, got two mighty handsome young men in here. Come look 'em over.
Matt and Sam exchanged glances, unaccustomed to being viewed like sides of beef. They both wished they'd shaved that morning when the girls came into the room.
Lisa and Leah, Matt and Sam.
The girls smiled at the boys, and the boys blushed. Lisa was a redhead, and Leah was a strawberry blonde. Both of them were shapely and very, very comely. They were wearing something that neither Matt nor Sam had ever seen before. Split skirts. They weren't breeches, and they weren't skirts. The brothers didn't know what the hell they were.
You boys had coffee?
No, sir.
Hell's fire, that ain't decent. Girls, go fetch the pot and some cups and tell your mama to come in and meet our guests. Tolkien cheated to start rattling them pots and pans. She's got some hungry men salivating out here.
Sparks pointed to the couch.
Sit.
Matt and Sam sat. Before they could get comfortable, the girls were back with coffee pot and cups. Before they could take the first sip, a very handsome lady entered the room. No split skirts for her. A full dress and a nice one at that.
My wife, boys. Nancy.
Matt and Sam were already on their feet.
Pleasure, ma'am.
Sit and drink your coffee, gentlemen. Dodge told us you had trouble with John Lee. Why should we believe you?
Mother?
No, let me finish. We know that John's been hiring gunfighters. These young men are gunfighters. They have the stamp upon them. How do we know John didn't send them here to kill us in our own home?
Matt's gaze cut to Dodge, standing off to the side of the room, his hand on the butt of his pistol. Another man was on Sam's right, also ready for action.
You have a right to be suspicious, but I can assure you all that we don't work for John Lee.
Those are good questions, ma'am, and you're right on one count. We have used a gun a time or two, but we don't hire them out, ever.
Very well. You can have a good meal. Then if you're here to cause trouble, you can be buried with a full stomach.
Never seen that brand before.
We're from Wyoming. Both of us own ranches up there, paying ranches. Both of us were scouting for the army when Custer was killed at Little Bighorn. Sam's father was killed there, too. He rode in, unarmed except for a coup stick. He did not want war.
My mother left me an inheritance. While I am not wealthy, I am comfortable. So is my blood brother, Matt Bodine.
Hell's fire! Matt Bodine!
After the family settled down, Matt told them all that he and Sam had heard from the gunfighters while in the loft of the stable, then told them what had taken place at their campsite on the Pecos.
John Lee's boys ride roughshod over everybody, except for me and mine. His spread is three times the size of mine, and he still wants more. He's either run out or killed the smaller ranchers in the area, only a few farmers left. And why he's doing it is something none of us understand.
Gold? Silver?
No, nothing like that around here. Water is the most precious thing in this part of the country, and both of us have about an equal supply of that. He's power hungry, I reckon.
Has he always been like this?
Pretty much so. We come into this area at about the same time, back in 55. We fought Indians and outlaws and Comancheros while we built our spreads. I got along with my neighbors. He didn't. John thrived on other folks' misfortune. Drought had come, and he wouldn't share his water or graze when he had it to spare. Bought people out for a nickel or dime on the dollar. Burned a few out, too, although that never could be proved up in a court of law.
Married?
Was. His wife died, and he raised the boy himself. Mean kid. Same age as our boy Gene. But that's where the resemblance ends. Nick is worse than his dad, if that's possible. quick with a short gun and likes to use it. He used to try courting Lisa here. She wouldn't have nothing to do with him. I finally run him off about 2 years ago, and he swore he'd kill me one day.
Where is your son?
Gone down to the settlement on the Pecos, about 30 miles south of here for supplies. Little place is called Pecos, but it ain't a real town yet. I can't buy nothing at the crossing. John Lee owns it all. Lock, stock, and horse troughs. He's run off or killed most of my hands. I'm down to 5 punchers, not counting Dodge. Hell, you boys know you can't run a spread this size with 5 hands. It's impossible.
A law?
There ain't no law west of the Pecos, boys. It's gun law out here. Survival of the fittest. Or the meanest.
What are you planning on doing? I mean...
I know what you mean. I don't see that I got a choice. I'm not a poor man, and I can afford to hire guns. I don't hold with that, but...
He lifted his shoulders in a gesture of, what else can I do?
Who has more money, you or John Lee?
Oh, John does. After his wife died, he come into a wad of money. She was from a wealthy family in Louisiana. French. Just the nicest person the body would ever want to meet. I don't know how in the hell she ever got tied up with John.
She fell in love.
And she must have had a taste for horse crap.
Matt and Sam exchanged glances. Sam shrugged.
Show us the boundaries of your spread. It's time me and Sam did some honest labor for a change.
What do you mean?
Why, you just hired yourself a couple of new hands, Mr. Sparks.
Matt and Sam met the other Circle S hands that evening over supper. From now on, unless invited to do so, they would take their meals in the bunkhouse with the crew. It was all prepared by Conchita anyway, and the hands took turns going to the big house and bringing it back. All the remaining hands, except one, were men in their 40s. Solid, hard-working cowboys. Not fast gun hands, but men who had handled guns all their lives and usually hit what they were shooting at with the first shot. They met Lomax, Tate, Bell, Red, and Jimmy. Jimmy was maybe 19, and that was iffy. If he was 19, he was a young 19.
His pa was the one of John Lee's men killed. His ma died shortly after that, heart attack. Being the only child, Jimmy was pampered as much as that can be out here. Wears a gun, but he ain't much good with it. Crack shot with a rifle, though, and he'll do what you tell him to do.
Jimmy's a good boy, but he swore to kill John Lee. We can't keep nursemaiding him, Matt. He's a man growed. You know well as me, probably better how 'tis out here.
Ought to let him go on and kill the dirty son. John Lee crossed the line a long time ago. He's no good.
Maybe that's what the boss hired these two to do.
You got something stuck in your throat, Bell. Spit it out.
Well, I don't like gunfighters. I never seen one yet who was able to do an honest day's work.
Neither me nor Sam ask for the name of gunfighter, Bell. And as far as work goes, both of us own ranches up north. Working ranches. Paying ranches. I can ride anything with hair on it. Rope just as good as an X-man, and just to set the record straight, I'd rather take a beating than have to string wire.
Bell looked at him for a moment, then a slow grin creased his lips.
I reckon you'll do, Bodine. I just heard some bad things about you is all.
What things?
That you like using those guns of yours.
I can't say that I haven't enjoyed killing a few men. Child rapers and torturers, back-shooting cold-blooded murderers, that type.
Bell slowly nodded his head.
Well, I hope you gut-shot him.
For the next several days, Sam and Matt rode the sprawling range of the Circle S, familiarizing themselves with as much of it as possible.
There's got to be more to it than what we've been told.
Maybe not.
Is that all? Maybe not doesn't tell me much. Of course, that may be all that you have on your mind, considering the usual state of your mind.
All you have on your mind is Lisa, and you better be careful, brother.
I know. It is a harmless flirtation, nothing more. I will not permit anything more.
You might not have a say in the matter if she starts taking it seriously.
I know. But what am I to do? Ignore her?
No. Because if you do that, you'll make her mad. And then you'll really have hell to pay.
After all is said and done, there is no difference between women, red or white.
They rode on for another mile or so in silence. Early summer, and it was already hot. After a while, they turned and began moving a herd of cattle, really more than two men could handle, heading them back toward a range closer to the big house. It had been a very dry spring, and the cattle were ranging all over the place looking for graze. Sparks and Dodge rode up and pitched in, giving the brothers a hand with the herd.
I got to sell some. Got too many on the land.
Let's round them up and drive them to market.
Can't get hands, Matt. Nobody wants to buck John Lee. He's put the word out that riding for me is dangerous for your health.
How long can you hold on, Jeff?
Not long. They cut back on the garrison at Fort Stockton, and Fort Concho buys beeves from ranchers around there. I gotta ship them by railroad, and that means a long drive. And I'd have to leave men behind to guard the ranch. John had burned me out.
And that doesn't leave you but one option, does it, Jeff?
What do you mean, Matt?
If John Lee won't let you and the others live in peace, then you've got to get together and take out John Lee.
I've been trying to convince him of that for months. Like talking to a fence post.
I know that feeling.
I won't start the war, Matt. I just can't do it.
Seems like to me it's already started.
I told him that too. Jeff, we've been through too much to see it all go down like this.
I'll not hire professional killers.
What if he makes a hostile move against you? What then?
Then, we'll see.
The rancher rode on ahead to take the point.
He's a good, decent, honorable man. Very high-principled. And those are the very things that's gonna get him killed.
Has he tried to talk to John Lee?
Many times. Jeff called John out last year. Said they could settle it this way without anybody getting killed. Took off his gun belt and called him out in the street in Crossing for a fight. Stand up, bare knuckle, kick and gouge. John wouldn't do it. He lost a lot of face that day. Lots of snickering went on, and still going on behind his back.
Is he insane?
No, I don't think so. He's just a low-down and mean-spirited man. Hell, boys, this ain't nothing new on John Lee's part. He's always been this way to a degree. He just got worser over the years, is all.
I noticed that no one rides alone.
Boss's orders. Good orders. A couple of hands have been bushwhacked. One was roped and drugged. Busted him up bad. The whole shebang ain't but days from coming to a head. I expect since John's hired all them gun slicks, it'll pop any time now.
Is that the reason Jeff sent his son for supplies? For food and ammo?
Yeah. Only other rancher standing up to John sent his boy with young Gene. Ed Carson owns the Flying V. His property butts against the Circle S on the east side. He's down to three hands. They're good boys, but they ain't gun hawks. Just damn good punchers.
They pushed the cattle onto new graze and left them, then rode for the ranch, reaching home just as the shadows began to lengthen in purple hues.
You boys come to supper at the house tonight. Gene's back, and I want you to meet him and Ed Carson and the family. It's a once-a-month doing for the ladies. Life's hard on the women out here. See you shortly.
The brothers bathed and shaved and slicked up well by frontier standards. They blackened their boots and dabbed some sweet-smelling cologne on their faces.
You boys cast your peepers on Cindy Carson. We'll tell you now that she's sweet on Nick Lee, and we think she's feeding him information about her daddy's spread and to the Circle S. Don't say nothing to her that you don't want repeated.
Does her father know this?
No. She's the apple of her daddy's eye, that girl is. She can do nothing wrong. And Jeff don't believe it neither. We've all seen where she meets that little punk. Tracks don't lie. She's got herself a paint pony that can damn near fly. She holds the reins in her right hand. She's left-handed. You're a tracker, Matt. You know that causes the pony to throw its gait peculiar. We've all trailed her to the meeting place over near a grove of cottonwoods by a creek, and they don't hold hands and look tender-like into each other's eyes, neither. They get right down to business like married folks with the lamp out. Disgusting.
She's a no-count whore's what she is, selling her daddy out. She ought to have a buggy whip taken to her backside.
This Cindy throws a kink into matters.
Sure does. Business plans are sure to come up at the table. And if the boys are right in there thinking, she's sure to report what is said to Nick.
Want to see if we can't cut her trail in the morning?
You're reading my mind, brother.
Ed and Nettie Carson were good people trying to live decently in the face of hard times. Their son, Noah, was a good-natured young man with a fast grin and a sense of humor. He and Gene Sparks shared a lot in common. Cindy was quite another story. She was a pretty but pouty thing, with too much rouge on her cheeks and a smart-aleck mouth. Neither Matt nor Sam trusted her any farther than line of sight.
I never sat down at the table with no engine before.
I shall endeavor to master the complicated art of eating with knife and fork, miss. However, don't be alarmed if my savage heritage soon overcomes genteel manners and I begin to eat with my fingers.
Cindy glared hatred at Sam, then directed her glare toward Matt.
So, you're the famous gunfighter. You'd better watch your step around these parts. There are men around here who'll take those guns away from you and feed them to you.
Her mother gave her a look that should have shut the brat's mouth immediately.
Cindy!
Matt spooned mashed potatoes onto his plate and covered them with chicken gravy.
There are men who have tried that. I'm still here and they're cold in the ground. Now why don't we move the subject to something more appropriate for the dinner table?
I agree. Cindy, tuck your napkin in your bodice and fill your mouth with food.
Noah grinned and winked at Matt.
What's the word down at Pecos?
Saw half a dozen hard cases head out, riding this way. Saloon man said Dan Ringgold was coming in.
That's bad news.
You know him?
We both do. He's poison mean and a back shooter. He uses a .44-40 and is a crack shot.
That's a pretty dress you have on, Cindy.
It's old. I wanted a new one. Maybe I can have one for the dance.
What dance?
The shindig John Lee's throwing at Crossing. We heard about it all the way down to Pecos.
Well, we sure won't be going to that. Besides, I doubt that John Lee will offer us any invitations.
I don't ever get to go anywhere!
I apologize for her behavior. It's very lonely for her out here.
Why don't you send her to a finishing school back east?
You know, that's the odd thing. We were going to do that. Had it all arranged. Then she refused to go. I swear, I don't know what's come over this younger generation. I think they're going to rack and ruin.
You think I should go talk to her?
No. She'd probably give you a cussing. A girl's getting a bad mouth on her. Pass some of them beans, please.
Red came into the dining area, hat in hand.
Boss, that girl's done throwed a saddle on a horse and took off. Hiked her dress plumb up to her... Anyway, she's gone.
Don't let her worry, Red. She's gone back to the ranch, cutting cross country. I just hope there ain't no renegade Comanches roaming around this night.
They wouldn't catch her. She throwed that saddle on Lightning.
Leah jumped up from the table.
That bitch took my horse!
Her mother fanned herself vigorously with her napkin.
Leah!
You watch your mouth, young lady.
What'd she call our girl mother?
Leah didn't pay any of them the slightest bit of attention. She turned to face Red, preparing to let him have it for letting Cindy take Lightning. But Red had seen it coming, and it hit the air.
We'll just take our plates and sit out on the porch.
Both Matt and Sam rose, quickly, and grabbed another couple of pieces of chicken.
Did she call our girl a bitch, Mother?